Now Jericho was straitly shut up because of the children of Israel. None went out, none came in. And the Lord said unto Joshua, See, I have given into thine hand Jericho, and the king thereof, and the mighty men of valor. And ye shall compass the city, all ye men of war, and go round about the city once. Thus shalt thou do 6 days. And 7 priests shall bear before the ark 7 trumpets of ram's horns. And the 7th day ye shall compass the city 7 times. And priests shall blow with the trumpets. And it shall come to pass that when they make a long blast with the ram's horn, when you hear the sound of the trumpet, all the people shall shout with a great shout, and the wall of the city shall fall down flat, and the people shall ascend up every man straight before him. In the book of Exodus, we see that Israel was in bondage in Egypt for 400 years. God miraculously delivered them from that bondage, which of course is a type of salvation. He had promised them the land of Canaan. Now, Canaan represents the blessings of God upon our lives. It represents our enjoyment of the Lord, the present inheritance of the child of God, represents the peace of God in the heart. The Bible tells us that Canaan was a land of plenty, flowing with milk and honey. Represents the abundant life. It represents an advancing spiritual life, a higher plane of living. It represents basically the heavenly life lived upon earth. It is the promise of God. It is the enjoyment of the grace of God. We see that in Deuteronomy 6, verses 10 and 11. They would inhabit houses that they did not build. They would have vineyards that they did not have, that they did not plant, and so on. That's grace. And to live in Canaan is to live in the grace of God. Really, what is pictured by Canaan is the life that every child of God can live in this earthly life. Now, after Israel was delivered from Egypt, a journey that should have taken only 11 days took 40 years. The whole time, they had the promise of Canaan. But because of their unbelief, they wandered in circles for 40 years, failing to enter into the enjoyment of the promise of God. They had the promise of God, but for 40 years they failed to enter into the enjoyment of that promise. Because they did not believe God enough to listen and submit to Him, they had 40 years of aimless wandering instead of the enjoyment of the promise of God. Because they did not maintain fellowship with God, they lived 40 years between Egypt and Canaan. And that is where most of God's people live today. Between Egypt and Canaan. They haven't gone all the way back to Egypt. But they haven't entered Canaan either. And they live somewhere in between. In our text, Israel, after 40 years of living between Egypt and Canaan, they have stepped foot into the promised land. Canaan was basically made up of city-states, and each of these was ruled by a king. And as Israel enters Canaan, they are faced with the first of these city-states, Jericho. Here in Joshua chapter 6, we have record of Israel conquering this city of Jericho. Here in Joshua 6, we see God's instruction to Joshua concerning the capture or the victory over Jericho, and then Joshua relaying that instruction to Israel, and then Joshua and Israel, the actual following of the instruction. We want to take the thought of the message from a portion of the instruction that God gave to Joshua and that Joshua relayed to the people. In verse 5, the latter part of that verse, when ye hear the sound of the trumpet, all the people shall shout with a great shout, and the wall of the city shall fall down. I want you to notice that they were to shout before the wall of the city fell down. We see this same thing brought out in verse 16. Last part of the verse, shout, for the Lord hath given you the city. And then in verse 20, the people, again, about a little over halfway down, the people shouted with a great shout that the wall fell down flat. Again, they shouted before the wall fell. So that the people went up into the city, every man straight before him, and they took the city. Again, what we want to notice is that they were to shout not after the walls came down, not after the inhabitants of Jericho fled, but they were to shout before a single brick fell, before a single inhabitant had fled, before there was any visible evidence of victory, they were to shout. And I believe that this is a shout of victory. And it is a shout of victory before there is any outward evidence of victory. So this is a shout believing and expressing, we are victorious. We are more than conquerors. We are on the winning side. We have already claimed the victory through the promise and the power of God. We know the victory belongs to us. If God be for us, who can be against us? Again, they shouted before there was any evidence of victory. Before a single brick fell, we read in verse 20, so the people shouted, knowing that since God had promised them victory, victory was theirs. They were to shout not because everything looked right. They were to shout not because everything felt right. They were to shout because God said the victory was theirs. The lesson is this. We do not need a single brick to fall. We do not need a single inhabitant to flee. We do not need for a single thing to happen to know that we have the victory. And this is why we read in 1 John 5 and verse 4, "For whatsoever is born of God overcometh the world. And this is the victory that overcometh the world, even our faith." Before a single brick fell, before a single inhabitant fled, before there were any outward visible results, they were to shout this victory. They were to believe, because God said it would happen. There are those, sadly, amongst God's people today, there are those losing the battle every day. Every day. They have the weapons for the warfare. They have the manual right here for the warfare. They have the Holy Spirit dwelling within them, and yet day after day they live lives of defeat. In fact, some have become so accustomed to losing, so accustomed to living in defeat, that they rationalize defeat. For over 40 years, Israel had failed to reach the promised life. And what is truly sad is they became content with life outside of Canaan. In other words, they began somewhere along the line to rationalize the fact that they lived between Canaan and Egypt. We as God's people, there is not a single child of God here that has to live a life of defeat. Not one. Not a single child of God has to live a life of defeat. Not a single child of God has to live outside of Canaan. And may I say that if you live outside of Canaan, you are living a life of defeat, whether you realize it or not. We don't have to live lives of defeat. We should never become accustomed to lives of defeat. Defeat should never be our norm. Losing the battle should never be the norm. In our text, God instructs Israel to march, and to do so with the assurance of victory. And that is what we want to preach upon this morning. Marching victoriously through life. Notice, first of all, in verse 1, those first two words. Now, Jericho. Those two words fit into the lives of many right now. Now, Jericho. Israel has stepped into Canaan. And there it is. Jericho. A fortress city. A symbol of the enemy's strength and power. Now, Jericho. There is Jericho. A powerful fortress. Standing in the way and barring Israel's entrance into a wonderful life. Jericho was one of those well-secured cities, of which 10 of the carnal spies sent into the land came back and said, "The people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great." And in Deuteronomy 1 and verse 23, the cities are great and walled up to heaven. Now Jericho, before Israel could move any further into the promise of God, before they could move into the enjoyment of the promise of God, something had to be done with Jericho. It could not go any further until Jericho was conquered. Now Jericho. You realize that people get up day after day after day after day. Now Jericho, there it is. Every day. And they don't do anything about Jericho. And consequently, they live lives of defeat. They never enter into the enjoyment of the promises of God. Now Jericho, around the city of Jericho, was an embankment with a retaining wall at the base of that embankment. That retaining wall, we're told, was anywhere between 12 and 15 feet high. On top or directly behind that was another wall. A mud brick wall about 6 feet thick and about 20 to 25 feet high. And on top of that embankment, you have the base of the embankment, there are walls. And then on the top of that embankment is a brick wall standing about 46 feet above ground level. So there were massive exterior and interior walls. Humanly speaking, it was utterly impossible for the Israelites to penetrate those walls. And within those walls were a fierce and warlike people, given over to idolatry. So there's Jericho. Opposed to God. Opposed to God's people. Standing in the way of spiritual advancement. There's Jericho. A threat to the very life of Israel. Again, humanly speaking, there is no way for the Israelites to get past Jericho. Something has to be done with Jericho. You try to ignore Jericho, and I guarantee you, when you get up in the morning, now Jericho, there it is. You ignore it another day and another day and another day. And you live your life standing in front of those massive walls of Jericho, failing to enter day after day in the promises of God. And you rationalize, and you cast blame, and you make excuses. But none of that tears down those walls of Jericho. So there's Jericho. But God had promised Joshua in Joshua 1, verse 3 and verse 5. He said, "Every place that the sole of your foot shall tread upon, that have I given unto you." Does that include Jericho? Yes, it does. "There shall not any man be able to stand before thee. all the days of thy life. Joshua had that promise. And now Jericho, Israel, had that promise that they were to go in to possess nations greater and mightier than thyself, cities great and fenced up to heaven. God had given the promise, a promise of possession, a promise of protection. But he did not promise that there would not be a fight. That he did not promise. He promised the victory. So there's Israel. Just like you and I. With a promise from God. Every single saved person here has the promises of God. Promise of victory. They step into Canaan, and there's Jericho. And the attitude of those within those walls was this: nobody breaks down these walls. Nobody breaks down these walls. Israel is to move on. Israel is to advance past Jericho into the blessings of God. They have the promise of God that they will be victorious. But there it is, Jericho. Standing in the way. Here is a massive and intimidating obstacle and barrier in the way. There are the children of Israel with the promises of God, and it appears that they have arrived at a dead end. But God has a higher plane of spiritual living for them. But there's Jericho. And it appears that they can go no further. You realize that there is not a saved person here that cannot go further spiritually. You have not reached the end. You have not reached the point where you've gone as far as you can go. Or there may be a Jericho standing in your way, and you may choose not to go any further. But you don't have to live there. You don't have to live there. You don't have to live a life of defeat. God has promised the victory. And we don't need a single brick to fall to know that we have the victory. We just need the faith to believe the promise of God. So standing before them, barring their spiritual progress, is what seems beyond the realm of possibility. Jericho. Those walls were meant to obstruct. They were meant to disrupt and interfere with the spiritual advancement of Israel. And these walls come in many forms today. Satan and his demonic forces have many such fortifications. You may get up in the morning and Satan may have built a Jericho. And you get up in the morning and there it is. Now, Jericho. Satan has his fortifications. The world, with all of its antichrist philosophies, The world with all of its antichrist opinions and ways and pursuits has built and is building massive fortifications greater than Jericho. People aligned with Satan. And you had better realize that there are people aligned with Satan and the forces of hell. And they have built and are building massive fortifications greater than Jericho. But our sinful flesh also is in the business of building massive fortifications in resistance to God. Trials and difficulties, if we're not careful, we'll make them to be fortifications of resistance against God. So there are the Israelites before those massive walls of Jericho. And every one of us here can identify. We can see it. We can identify. Notice, secondly, we see the foe. There was a word of assurance from the Lord. So there's Joshua. I picture him, he's standing there, he's just looking at those walls. I imagine he's thinking, what in the world are we going to do? How are we going to get enough rope to scale those walls? How in the world are we going to get past those walls? But notice, God shows up. In verse 2, and the Lord said unto Joshua. I picture Joshua standing there, and it's as if the Lord tapped Joshua on the shoulder and said, Joshua. And then notice what he said. See. It's not, Joshua, do you see those walls? Joshua, do you see how tall? Do you see how massive those walls are? That's not what he's saying. He says, see, I have given into thine hand Jericho. God is reminding him of the promise of God. He says, Joshua, see, I have given you. He's calling attention to himself. Yes, Joshua, there are those walls. See, I have, calling attention to himself. We need to be a people with our ear toward heaven, listening for the voice of God. God knew all about Jericho. He knew all about those walls. May I say, he was there when the walls were constructed. He knew all about the mortar in those walls. He knew the position of every brick in those walls. He knew the fierceness. He knew the might of the people behind those walls. And he knew the weakness of Joshua and the Israelites. And he knew what they were thinking. He knew what they were feeling. And again, it's as if he tapped Joshua on the shoulder and said, "Joshua, see, I have given into thine hand Jericho." That's a very important word. See. He's not instructing Joshua to see the situation through his physical eye. He's not saying, "Now, Joshua, what I need you to do is I need you to evaluate the situation and come up with a plan." It's not what God says. He's not asking Joshua to evaluate the situation based on what was reasonable to Joshua. He says, "Joshua, see, I have given." He is calling Joshua to envision by faith. "Joshua, do you remember that promise? Can you see it, Joshua? Can you see it? Envision it, Joshua. Envision it by faith." Again, this is the victory that overcometh the world, even our faith. He's telling Joshua, "Joshua, the victory is yours. Joshua, envision it by faith. Joshua, live the victory." And I believe that's what God is saying to us. You have the promise. Can you see it? Can you envision it by faith? Now, if you can envision it by faith, march on! Live the victory before a single brick falls, before there's any visible evidence whatsoever. Live the victory. We, like Joshua and Israel, we do not need a single brick to fall. We do not need a single thing to happen to know that we have the victory. We have the Word of God. We have the promise of God. And we need to live in the victory, not lives of defeat. And I assure you today that God knows that this world is a wilderness place. He knows it's a place of valleys and dungeons. He knows that it is a place of traps, a place of giants, a place of obstacles and barriers, a place of furnaces, a place of storms, a place of Jerichos. He knew all of that when He gave the promise that we are more than conquerors through Him. Did He not know all of those things? Did He not know every Jericho you would ever face? When He led Paul to write, "We are more than conquerors through Him," He knew all about it. And now He comes to us and He says, "See, I have given." That is, envision by faith. God knows your temptations. He knows every one of them. God knows our sinful tendencies. He knows our weaknesses. He knows our fears. He knows our trials, our difficulties, our circumstances, our sorrows. He knows the dragons that we fight. He knows everything that seeks to swallow us up and consume us. He knows the devil's agenda. He knows every wile of Satan. He knows every dart of Satan. He knows every snare that Satan has placed in your path. He knows everything that is a threat. to your spiritual advancement. And we need to hear him say, see, I have given to thee. I have already given you victory over that temptation. You don't have to fall. You don't have to be defeated. You have the promise of victory. Now live the victory. Live the victory. He knows that we live in a postmodern world and culture, saturated and permeated with wickedness and ungodliness and blasphemy and heresy and utter foolishness. He knows all about the adultery and the fornication and the immorality and the immodesty and the perversion and the lewdness and the idolatry and all the hatred and all the lying that is constantly being thrown at us every single day. He knows all about it, and he's already given us the promise of victory. We need to live the victory. Quit rationalizing your defeat. Oh, it's because of the world we live in. That's not why you're defeated. You're defeated because of unbelief. You're defeated because you do not maintain fellowship with God. You're not defeated because of the times in which we live. That's rationalization. He knows all about the fact that this is a time when God's order for the sexes and God's order for marriage and God's order for the home is ignored and tossed aside. He knows that this is a time when the dysfunctional is accepted. And when the dysfunctional is the norm, he knows that this is a time when hardly anybody does what is right. It's rare today for someone to do something right, to do it according to God's order. And God's people, living their lives of defeat, have come to accept people doing it wrong. How sad. How sad. Well, if you don't, you're unloving. Then be unloving. It's not unloving. Oh, for a people to just do what is right. It's refreshing when you hear that somebody did it God's way. Hey, that's refreshing. It's so rare. But God knew all of these things. He knew this would be the day in which you and I would live. And he's promised us the victory. See, I have given you. I can wake up in the morning. I can go through the day. And perhaps a temptation bombards me. And if I have my ear toward heaven, I will hear God say, Dan, see, I have given you the victory over this temptation. Now march on victoriously. You don't have to be defeated by this temptation. I believe that's true. Before a single brick begins to crumble, and before anything visible happens, we can simply, based upon what God has said, plant our feet on the ground and go forth, determined and resolved
that no matter how many Jerichos are in the way, I'm on the winning side. And I'm going to live like I'm on the winning side. Oh, it's sad that God's people are acting and living like they're on the losing side. They go through life every day like they're on the losing side. They go to bed at night like they're on the losing side. We're on the winning side. We need to win. We need to live that way. Because I'm on the winning side. And by God's help, and it's always by God's help, I am not going to be swallowed. I am not going to be consumed by the humanistic thinking, ways, pursuits, and the filth of the world. I have victory. We need to live the victory. I'm not going to be swallowed up. Again, we can, based upon the promises of God, we can plant our feet, we can go forth, and we can say, by the help of God, I'm not going to be swallowed up by my circumstances. I'm not going to be defeated by my circumstances. Because I'm on the winning side. I'm not going to be taken captive. And I'm not going to be defined by this world. I'm not going to live a defeated, a discouraged, a confused, a restless, a hopeless, and joyless life. But based upon what God has said, I'm going to live the victory. That needs to be our attitude every day. Based upon what God has said, we can plant our feet and we can go forth by the help of God, with this attitude, I am not going to lose the battle against immorality. I am not going to lose the battle against the destroying forces that have aligned themselves against my family and my home. God has promised me the victory. We need to live the victory. I'm not going to lose the battle against the destroying forces that try every day to bring down our testimony. I'm not going to lose the battle to the destroying forces that try to keep us from this book. We need to determine, I have the victory. And a lot of people need to get off Facebook and get their face in the book. We have the victory. And we need to live that victory. There's people, they live lives of defeat. I mean, out of 365 days, 360 of them are days of misery and days of defeat. And they can't understand why when they tell a friend, well, you just need to trust in the Lord, why they don't. Because they look at you. And they see how it's working for you. And it doesn't make sense. God's people who live lives of defeat are terrible testimonies to the cause of God. We can go forth victoriously. By God's help, I'm not going to lose the battle against the forces that try to keep me from praying. I'm not going to lose the battle against the forces that try to keep me from worshiping God. Do you realize that every day of the week, especially on Wednesdays and Saturdays and Saturday evenings and Sunday mornings, that the forces of hell align themselves against you to keep you from worshiping God? But we have the promise of victory. I can worship God in spirit and truth. Based on what God has said, and by God's help, I can worship and I can live the victory. Don't live lives of defeat. We don't have to live there. I'm not going to lose the battle by falling prey to despair the self-pity, the self-sulking. By God's help, we have victory over these things. I'm not going to lose the battle. We need to go forth with this attitude. I'm not going to lose the battle and fall prey to envy, to fall prey to anger, to fall prey to bitterness. Oh, how we need to hear God. Oh, how we need our ears toward heaven. And we need to hear God saying, calling us by name, "See, I have given into thine hand Jericho. Now, Jericho." We all have Jerichos. Some have been facing the same Jericho almost since the day they've been saved. And they rationalize it. Oh, you just know it's always there. You don't have to live that way. We need to hear God say, "See, envision with an eye of faith what I have done, and live the victory." And with the children of Israel, we shout for the victory before a single brick falls. We shout for the victory based upon the promise of God. It's pitiful, but many need a change in the political climate to feel that they're victorious. That doesn't have to happen for you and I to live the victory. We have the Word of God. We have the promise of God, and God says, "See, this world is going to be defeated, but we're on the winning side." And my point is, we need to start acting like it. We need to start living the victory. Before you even face your next Jericho, shout for the victory. Before you even face that next temptation, shout for the victory. We need some people to get tired of losing. Get tired of living defeated lives. You can get accustomed to losing. Believe me, I've been a Cub fan for 50 years, 52 years. You can get accustomed to losing. And how sad it is when that's true spiritually. But we can go from here today living the victory. Marching victoriously through life. Go from here today hearing Paul say, "I can do all things." That's victory. Through Christ, which strengtheneth me. Simply based upon what God has said. Each one of us, they're saved. You may be living a life of defeat right now. You may be losing battle after battle. But I'm telling you today, based upon what God has said, you can right now claim the victory and you can walk out those doors victorious. Not defeated. How sad. When God's people walk into the house of God defeated, walk out defeated. We ought to walk in victoriously and we ought to walk out victoriously. Ready to charge hell with a soaker. That's how confident we ought to be. Why? Because we're seeing the bricks beginning to fall? No. We don't need anything to happen. All we need to do is believe what God has said. Oh, live the victory today. Brother Larry, if you'd come, lead us in singing.